Welcome to Scrubland, guys, a Deck Builder's Wasteland this time. Scrubland presents. I'm here with both Chris Casby and Daniel Sale. This is Chris Burrows speaking. And we're going to talk about Dredgevine tonight. I am a huge fan of this deck. BDM made it, and I don't know, Brian David Marshall, for those not in the know.
He made it in conjunction with some other players.
He was the original creator, and he passed it off to Brad Nelson, who helped him tune the deck.
But well, in all fairness, there's been different things of this build since that mono black.
Oh yeah,
card discard cycling
so,
deck.
Right.
I don't know who made that, but I think that
and
was probably the forefather of this deck.
You're right.
It momentarily jumped to extended with Living End, which was exciting. But like that was also
Living
sort of a different
deck. I love
deck.
Travis Wu. By the way, Travis Wu is one of
Travis
my favorites.
Travis Wu is awesome. He's like
awesome.
Casby's idol.
He really is. The dude's awesome.
So let's talk about the actual deck list here. We have 4 Hedron Crab, 4 Enclave Cryptologist, 4 Merfolk Looter, 4 Fauna Shaman, 3 Noble Hierarch, 4 Birds of Paradise, 4 Renegade Doppelganger, which is awesome, by the way, that he actually got a spot in the deck somewhere.
Get your playsets now.
4 Extractor Demon, 4 Vengevine, 1 Sidraxis Alchemist, and some lands.
Renegade Doppelganger is he really is like the powerhouse of the deck.
He's the powerhouse of the deck.
He does everything.
The deck, okay, so this deck existed before M11 came out.
Right.
It did exist, and it was.
It showed up in one PTQ top 8 that I wasn't even there for. It was the Roanoke day one. And it was ridiculous.
It was really tier 2-ish, though. Like it just
it felt
didn't
that
have,
way.
It didn't have the tools it needed to really be really, really good.
Yeah.
And so instead, what Brian David Marshall suggested was that you play that you make green a player and you go to a black green blue build that more features green, because the original deck just had Vengevine in it. And
never
it
had
even,
the possibility of hard casting.
It went to some extremes,
right,
like where some of the builds just didn't have green at all.
Right.
And it was just a black blue deck that couldn't use it.
Right.
So instead, what they've done is they put in Fauna Shaman, Noble Hierarch, Birds of Paradise, and then you're able to cast your Vengevines randomly sometimes.
Right.
And then out of the board, you also get some green spells, Nature's Claim and Obstinate Baeloth, which we'll get to in a minute. But Fauna Shaman really gave the deck some power.
Oh yeah.
And holy smokes, the plays that this guy enables, it just across the board in all kinds of decks where we've already seen him be really good in the Naya Shard, where you're using Fauna Shaman Naya.
It's the same old Vengevine tricks, but now you got a little extra something with some Renegade Doppelganger.
Now you don't have to jump through the hoops. You don't have to play Bloodbraid Elf and Ranger of Eos. Instead, why don't we just play a shitload of one drops?
Yeah.
Where, and this is more of a go for broke kind of Fauna Shaman Vengevine deck, if there was one, because Naya Shaman is already fast.
Right.
This deck.
And they're like, let's add blue to make it faster.
This
deck.
Yeah. Yes. No. This deck can legitimately put 4 Vengevines into play on turn 2 and attack with them.
Yep.
Through the use of Hedron Crab. Play another second Hedron Crab, fetch land, mill 6, and then you can mill all your Vengevines in, and then make another creature off of the one mana that you use with your fetch land, whether
right.
it's a Bird of Paradise or another one drop. So this deck has a lot of one drops. One drops are Hedron Crab, Enclave Cryptologist, Noble Hierarch, and Birds of Paradise. So 15 one drops is a lot, and then everything else, and then
is it?
No way!
It is, but then everything else is a 2. Like,
yep.
I mean, the deck's amazing.
Like when your deck is built out of ones and twos, this deck also has no spells.
Renegade Doppelganger is a 2.
35 creatures.
Now I want to ask you a question. The way I see it, there is only 1 3 drop in the deck, and that's Enclave Cryptologist, and that's not actually because it's a 3 drop, but because you want to level it.
Well, I guess you
can
look
right?
at it as Extractor Demon as a 3-drop 5/5 haste flyer.
The Cryptologist is arguably the worst guy. And when I go to board with this deck,
you drop him a lot.
You can drop a Cryptologist, or you can drop Merfolk Leader, or you can drop Fauna Shaman. It kind of depends on the matchup.
Ooh, now that's going flying straight in the face of what Ochoa said.
I've experimented with doing all three. I may not be right, but sometimes I boarded out Fauna Shamans because he didn't seem that good. And those were matches where I wanted to bring in things like my Unified Will or my Nature's Claim, where they just... Yes, the tutoring effect is very, very powerful, but sometimes I just wanted better stuff. And yeah, I was testing with the deck, so I'm may very well be wrong. I'm sure that these guys put in many more hours than I did testing the deck. But the core of the deck is very, very good. And like Casby said, Renegade Doppelganger.
That guy's sick. Think about this. Fauna Shaman, everyone, the haters on Fauna Shaman, if there are actually any haters left
they
in
really
the world,
shouldn't be.
Card's awesome.
Because everyone, you know, when he first came out, everyone they said it's like, oh, you can bolt him. Okay, that's fine. Let's give him haste. Like, that's pretty much what Renegade Doppelganger does. Because you played Renegade Doppelganger on turn two, they're not going to get rid of it.
They might.
Well, they might. Exactly. And then your real Fauna Shaman sticks.
He really...
So you drop him, and you have the option of using Fauna Shaman on the turn you drop Fauna Shaman. In the sense that you're just using the Renegade Doppelganger.
Doppelganger really does play... He's working overtime for every creature in the deck.
Yeah.
Because he legitimately... I guess we should say what this card does if people don't know. This is
this is actually one of those 50-cent rares that people were going to look up.
This is a new card out of Rise of the Eldrazi, right?
Correct.
Right.
It is a rare.
It's a rare. That's correct. Go ahead.
Yeah. The guy who remembers every useless card ever. Who knows that Basking Root Wall is a 1/1?
Calm down.
All right, go. Casting cost.
It is a 0/1 creature for 1 and a blue. And whenever a creature enters the battlefield, the Renegade Doppelganger can become a copy of that creature until the end of turn.
There you go. And it's the end of your turn, which kind of blows in comparison to the rest of the clone
effects.
So
a couple
effects.
Of things different about this Doppelganger that other ones have done in the past. That you can make mistakes with if you pick up the deck raw. This card does not retain the copy ability after it copies once. Correct. Once you copy,
it's that guy until
the end of turn.
Right.
Also, when your opponent makes a guy, it does not copy that guy.
Correct.
It stays as a 0/1.
Right.
Also, another important thing to remember is that it is a May effect.
It is also a May effect.
So if you bring back a Extractor Demon and you forget your trigger and say, oh, this guy's an Extractor Demon too, you're swinging with a 0/1 and a 5/5.
Right. Yep.
And so that's where... I've exclusively played this deck on Magic Online, where the triggers are very, very obvious.
Right.
And do you want to trigger this? No, absolutely not.
It's a
I'm
going to
forget
bit,
this time.
It's kind of foolproof.
Yeah.
But it's very helpful for learning a deck like this, and kudos to people that play it in cardboard, because, wow, there's a lot of triggers. And
And
not to say that they're impossible, but the deck is very... It becomes very skill-intensive, and you cannot pick this deck up raw and play it well.
Now, that's the awesome part about this deck, really, is that there are so many really fine little triggers that you should know a lot about. Like, some of the plays that I picked up during... Because I read the U.S. Nationals coverage. Of some of my favorite plays that they really highlighted were things like, play my Hedron Crab, I'm going to play this fetch land, and then I'm going to crack it in response to the Hedron Crab targeting me trigger. I'm going to get the most value mathematically out of my deck by getting this island first and then milling six.
Right.
And, just little things like that. You got to know a lot of the little
The first time details. Probably doesn't affect too much, but the third and fourth time, it's getting there.
The math is similar to the math on fetch lands in general, where, yes, mathematically it is correct to play eight. Like, if you're mono red, you should play four Arid Mesas and four Scalding Tarns, because you want to draw as few mountains as possible. So every time you fetch with an Arid Mesa for mountain, you're technically gaining value, even though it's minuscule.
Hooray!
And the same concept applies here, where you stack your Hedron Crab trigger and then sack your fetch land, because that's minus one land, which creates another Hedron Crab trigger. And then you mill six.
Right.
So it's minus one possibility for a land to go into your graveyard. Because in this deck, your graveyard is a resource.
Right. And you want to get as much meat in your graveyard as
you're
possible.
You're going to lay... This is the kind of deck where you lay your graveyard out in the battlefield area. Because you need to see all the cards that are there. Because sometimes, whoops, I only have two swamps in my deck, and they're both in my graveyard.
Right.
So if you accidentally crack your Verdant Catacombs, and
you don't get a swamp.
and then you're like, oh, I don't have any swamps. Whoops. Now my combat math is all wrong, and it's bad for me. There's a lot of very chintzy things that can happen where you're like, oh, no. Man, I could have played this better. And the deck itself, this is a Magic Player's deck. Holy smokes. This is a Magic Player's deck for Magic players, because you can't walk away from a game when this deck is, whether you're playing with it or against it, and say, my opponent lucked out. There's absolutely no way, because there's just so much magic happening. There's the stack, and there's triggers, and there's mathematics, and there's all these complicated, like, different plays that you can make with this deck that just are incredible. So
tell me about some of your sweet plays.
Okay, so sweet plays that you can do with this deck. The reason that this deck plays four Birds of Paradise and three Noble Hierarchs, which runs a little bit contrary, is that, for one thing, this deck runs 35 creatures, no spells. Right. So, yeah, like, if you could run eight, that'd be fine, but lands to creatures, it's a ratio that you want, so whatever.
Let's say no spells main, because I noticed that this
one of those. The one of Sidraxis Alchemist, I love that guy.
It's sort of a spell.
He's a utility creature.
So, going back to Birds of Paradise, the reason you want four of him and three Noble Hierarchs is Birds of Paradise taps for black, which Noble Hierarch is the king of Bant colors.
Right.
And wow, is he good at doing that.
But however,
this deck wants black mana every once in a while, and it's kind of greedy as three color off color decks are.
Right.
And you get the advantage of four Misties and four Verdants. However,
it's still
not enough, because it's a very greedy deck. You have Hedron Crabs and Cryptologists, and then on the other side you have Noble Hierarchs and Birds of Paradise all at one. So Misty Rainforest on turn one can be very daunting sometimes to look at it, and it requires you to evaluate your hand, because sometimes you make your Birds of Paradise, and sometimes you make your Hedron Crab.
Right.
With your Misty Rainforest, because it's just the way your hand dictates it, and once you play the deck a couple times, you're going to realize what that is. But what you can do is, oftentimes, you end up with not a lot of black mana, and because you only run two Swamps and three Drowned Catacombs. So you just don't have an excess of black mana, but you don't need an excess of black mana, because your only black spells are Unearth Extractor Demon, which is two and a black.
Right.
And Sidraxis Alchemist, which
is also two and a black, correct?
Is two and a black.
Right.
So you don't need the black mana all the time. So what you're able to do is, generally, you're just going to find forests and islands to put into play.
Right.
When you need a black mana, you can play a Birds of Paradise. Okay.
Sometimes. There's going to be
a little bit of setup. However, Doppelganger in play, Birds of Paradise in hand.
Need to filter that green mana into a black.
Basically. So play your Birds of Paradise, Doppelganger becomes Birds of Paradise, tap Doppelganger for black, Unearth Extractor Demon, crush. And
downs.
Well, not the optimal play, but sometimes you just need to get in that five damage. Like,
now tell me something that
sometimes that's great.
Well, no, I'm saying, like, sure, optimally you're swinging for 10 in the air,
right,
with two Extractor Demons.
Right.
But, you know, but like things, you said, the mana isn't always there.
The guy's at five. You need to lava axe him with a demon.
Yeah, exactly.
This is how you do it. All right, but I actually have a question. This is something I legitimately do not know.
Okay.
Extractor Demon, when he is unearthed, does his... Now, okay, the reason that I asked this question is all throughout the coverage, they mentioned every single Hedron Crab mill for every Dredgevine player. However, whenever Extractor Demon goes to the graveyard, there's a trigger that says you mill two cards.
It's not going to the graveyard. It's Leaves Play.
Or Leaves Play?
Yes.
Now, does he trigger on himself?
Yes. And
he does after an Unearth.
Incorrect.
Yes. No.
Okay.
Now,
this is the
Daniel Sale has played this online, so he would know this.
This is the way the card works. If you unearth one Extractor Demon and put it into play, swing for five or six with a Noble Hierarch, which happens sometimes, which is fun. You're like, oh, I got an extra one.
Woo!
Once that guy leaves play, he exiles.
Right.
I'm not exactly sure. It's a Leaves Play trigger, correct?
Right.
Okay. So the card does not trigger on itself, because it's whenever another creature leaves play, whether that is your creature or your opponent's creature.
I think I was confused because I've seen this happen before with two
when multiple extractor demons leave play, especially at the end of turn when the effects wear off.
Because yeah, this trigger happens.
You run into some moments where your doppelganger is also an extractor demon, mm-hmm. so then at that point you have two. So the way that effects wear off at the end of turn is that your guy will exile, and then after that, your doppelganger will turn back into a regular guy, and they'll see the triggers. Right. And if your extractor demon is the only guy that leaves, I believe you only mill
the two for the two. Existing doppelganger.
I believe you only mill two.
Okay.
And this is where Magic Online helps a lot, because it kind of just says put your four triggers on the stack, and you're like, okay, I'm just going to target myself with all of them.
Right.
Yep.
And so it. I'm not exactly sure on all the rules for that, because this is legitimately only a deck I've played online.
Okay.
But
well, I've seen a little bit, and that's why I thought that he triggered himself, and I think what happened was that there was two in play, and they just saw each other.
Right.
And,
so this is not the most...
I'm guessing way back with that wannabe Cabal Coffers bullshit deck.
That deck was out of the blue.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
All right, anyway.
The Extractor Demon Mill is pretty good, but is not essential to making the deck run.
Right. Well, and I guess in theory, you've got the Hedron Crab engine going before, which is just infinitely better than Extractor Demon.
Right.
One of your worst enemies with a deck like this is Day of Judgments and similar Pyroclasm-type effects that can sweep your board. Because this deck needs multiple creatures in play with activated abilities to make them work.
Right.
So if your opponent is able to just clear board, sometimes you can recover miraculously, because
Cunning Spark Mage seems to do a number on this deck.
It does. Cunning Spark Mage is a very real problem. So Day of Judgment and Cunning Spark Mage are probably enemies numbers 1 and 2. And so, a lot of times, the white-blue decks don't have the Day of Judgments in hand.
Right.
Because they tend to skimp on them a little bit, because they're not great in their main deck. So, you don't generally see a white-blue player playing, like, a straight 4 of.
Yeah.
Right.
They'll normally play a 2 or a 1 or whatever. But you don't normally have to worry about it so much in game 1. After that, they could have any number of them. They probably go up to 4. Right. It becomes a much greater concern, and you have to play more conservatively. David Ochoa, who top 8-ed, played Pithing Needle in his board, and specifically for beating Cunning Spark Mage.
That's correct.
Because a Cunning Spark Mage that's active just goes...
Spark Mage on turn 2 says, let's scoop and just
like,
it just goes
pow, 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 and you can never keep a guy on the table. Right. In contrast, Brad Nelson also top 8-ed and played Leyline of Vitality, the green Leyline.
Which I'm not as big a fan of. What have you been playing in your sideboard?
Well, that guy seems really good. Leyline of Vitality seems like it serves more purposes. It gives you an out versus the aggro decks. And it beats Spark.
It's an additional card you could play against the aggro decks. However, the deck list is kind of tight, and you have 4 Obstinate Baloths to bring in against aggro decks. So bringing in the ley lines there doesn't seem great. I've been playing Pithing Needles. However, I didn't know about the existence of Leyline of Vitality until tonight. So, in this deck, like I didn't follow the coverage as closely, and so I didn't absolutely get that piece of technology.
Right.
It seems fine. It's a little bit lucky, whereas Pithing Needle is a little bit more consistent.
Will you ever want to cast this on turn 4 is a question.
That's the problem with all ley lines, is that they're 4 drops that
sometimes are free.
They're either free or they're 4.
Right.
And
how about 2 questions then? How much does a mulligan hurt you? Because if you keep 7 and you end it with a ley line, that's a mulligan.
Not really.
It's a mulligan with an effect.
Well, it's kind of like a mini... It depends on how you think about it. I was thinking about this the other day, because I've been goofing off with decks with ley lines, like I said last time. but it's you start with one less card, but it's kind of like a time walk. Because it you have to like look at it weirdly. Like it's like, okay, it's a 4-drop that helps me with my game plan.
Okay.
And it's also a 4-drop that you just get in for free. So that means you get all your infinite 4-drops that are way better that you can actually cast. You know?
Fair
so,
enough.
So like depending on which ley line it is and what your matchup right. is, it's gonna be worse or better. But
I am not a fan of 2 ley lines in the board. It seems extremely cute. It is not something that I'm not saying it's bad. However, it is not something that I would mulligan to achieve.
Right. Right.
If I draw 7 and it looks like a reasonable 7, just because I boarded in 2 ley lines doesn't mean I'm going to try to put them like I'm not mulliganing to them. It's not right. as essential as say red deck wins that's about to face core Firewalker,
right.
where you have to get that ley line of punishment or you might just be toast. And so that's something that you might consider a lot more heavily in this deck. Pithing Needle does a lot more only because this is a deck that draws a lot of cards. Merfolk Looter, while he is an engine card that continuously enables you, you can't overlook the fact that he just makes you see more cards.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
By just drawing more cards, Pithing Needle costs 1.
Yeah.
So it seems a little bit more consistent in that regard, whereas Leyline of Vitality seems a little more lucky. I'm not exactly sure what's right. I'm sure if we asked Brad Nelson, he would shrug and say Pithing Needle is probably better.
Yeah. Well, I think, like I said, I think they're just different. And Leyline, I don't like 2 Leylines either. I don't really like 2 Pithing Needles either. It seems like a weird number for a deck that mills way too much stuff into your graveyard.
Okay, so the other cards that are in this sideboard, 3 Unified Will, which the Unified Will is 1 and a blue, counter target spell if you control more creatures than the opponent that controls the spell. Yeah. And this deck is full of 1s and 2s, so it should always be live.
Right.
In matchups that you want it, which are generally blue-white control and Valakut ramp decks.
Right.
Those are pretty much the only spots that would be fantastic.
But it would be fantastic as hell.
Yeah, absolutely. It's exactly what you want. 3 Nature's Claim, which is it costs G. It is a...
Destroy target... enchantment or artifact, and that enchantment or artifact's controller gains 4 life.
Yep. So it's a 1 mana naturalize that gives them 3 life. This card has jumped.
Well, it's 4. Right?
No, it's just 3.
So 3?
This card has jumped everywhere.
Life gain?
To.
It was 4.
Vintage, Legacy. This is a staple sideboard card. It's in Eternal formats, you basically decide between this and Corrosion Grip. As your naturalize effect.
Yeah, because I mean, that 1 mana really does make a difference.
Well, this card is that good.
Yeah,
really
everyone's
is.
Like, oh, they gain 4 life. It's like, yeah, but it costs 1.
Right.
And, like, you know, some people look at it and you're like, no. Yeah. That 1 mana really does make
it
a difference.
It really does matter.
Bringing it in against Pyromancer's Ascension, that's the one deck that really needs to resolve its Pyromancer. Like, Pyromancer's Ascension has to have the namesake enchantment in play.
To win.
Or their deck doesn't do a whole lot. Right. So if you can 1-for-1 them with naturalize, it might just be good enough to steal the game because this deck is very fast.
It's really fast.
You have 4 Obstinate Baleoth on the board. They tend to be very good against Jund and Mono Red, possibly allies, which is still around. And just other aggro decks, vampires, it's also good against.
Miscellaneous aggro.
Right. And so what you do when you're trying to bring in the 4 Obstinate Baleoth is you're going to cut stuff that just doesn't seem nearly as good. And you can actually, it's almost a transformative sideboard where you can just be a really bad beatdown deck. And
sometimes that's good enough. Well, that's the thing. Like when you go against aggro, like mid-game decks, yeah.
Mid-range, yeah.
Mid-range deck is you know, they have more staying power than aggro. So if you just transform your deck into a mid-range deck,
right,
and you start playing with weird 4-drops like Obstinate Baleoth and Sleep.
Right. Sleep. Definitely.
Sleep's like, oh, let's race.
And woo! So and that, I'll trip that you. Was the... According to the coverage,
the MVP
dealers were... had a run on Sleeps.
Yep.
At some point because... It kind of broke out. Is this like Sleep is the
sleep
hot card of the tournament?
Yep.
Tournament that
which, some kind of amazing,
which seems ridiculous because I mean, 4 mana for tap your team, it doesn't untap is
pretty dumb.
Pretty dumb and constructive.
Like, in a good way.
Like, I mean, in draft, like, in M11, in M10 draft, it was great. In M11 draft, it's...
way better.
Not,
no, I don't know.
We're not going to talk too much about that. Let's keep it a topic.
It's been debatable, but in constructed, I don't think anybody's played asleep. So...
you're right.
To see the sleeps on the board, it's cool. You can just play it against Naya because it taps their Fauna Shaman, and then it sort of answers their Fauna Shaman because the deck is fast enough that answering their Fauna Shaman for one turn can just kill them.
Enough, yeah.
Like straight out because sleep on one turn, you get to untap, and then if you have anything active or Vengevines in your graveyard, Extractor Demons in your graveyard, you can haste it up and kill them.
You go wild.
While their whole team is tapped.
Yeah.
Like, I hope you played a Bird of Paradise because here's a bunch of Extractor Demons.
Right.
And the deck is very, very good. If you guys are planning on trying to play this deck, I would personally recommend trying to play it online first because online will just teach you
all the triggers.
A lot of stuff about how this deck works. I know that it accelerated my learning process with it a whole lot.
Basically, MTGO just teaches you how to play Magic better in general.
It does. And this is a prime example of it because this is a Magic player's deck that makes all kinds of very complicated decisions throughout. And you need to learn this deck in and out before you ever try to play it. I guess that's pretty much all I have to say about Dredgevine. It's a very cool deck.
Yeah. This has been Deck Builders Wasteland, presented by Scrubland. We're out for the night, guys. Look forward to another Scrubland podcast coming out soon. You have a good night.
Take it easy.